Let's begin this second session by starting up your 6128. Switch it on and take your copy of the CPM disk and put it in the drive. Now start up CPM as you did in the previous session. Key in the vertical bar symbol and the letters CPM. Press return, and when you get the A prompt on screen, we'll be ready to move on. In the last session, I said that asterisks and question marks have special significance for CPM, and that's why you can't use them in file names. You've already used the asterisk with DIR to pick out COM files, so let's take a closer look. Key in DIR, a space, the letter S, asterisk, dot, COM. That reads, give me a directory of all the command files on the default drive whose file titles start with the letter S. Press return. That command works because you can use the asterisk to represent any combination of characters. Now, what about the question mark? The question mark is different from the asterisk in that you use the question mark to take the place of a single character rather than a group of characters. Try this. Key in DIR, space, the letter S, followed by two question marks. A dot or full stop, and COM. Now that reads, give me a directory of all the command files on the active drive whose file titles are no more than three letters long and start with the letter S. Press return, and you'll see there's just one file that matches the template you specified. So that's how you use the asterisk and the question mark to construct templates for file names. But why should you want to do it? Well, principally to save time and effort. Say, for example, you wanted to copy just the COM files from this system disk onto another disk. Copying them over one by one, keying in the file name each time, would be both time-consuming and error-prone. But you don't have to key in all the file names individually. You can do it with a single command, and be sure you don't miss any. So, how do you copy files? You know how to copy a whole disk, use Diskit, but that's not what we want to do here. We need another CPM program to copy individual files. The program we want is PIP, short for Peripheral Interchange Program. As that name suggests, PIP enables you to transfer information between the various components that are peripheral to your computer, between the disks and the screen, or the screen and the printer, and so on. PIP has a lot of uses, but the one we're interested in for now is copying information from one file to another. It's unlikely you'll be using PIP for much else. So think of PIP as being your file copying program, and Diskit as being your disk copying program. So let's see how to use PIP to copy a file from the disk in drive A onto the M drive. First, we need to load PIP, ready to copy a file. PIP is not one of the built-in programs, so you need the CPM disk in place. Key in PIP, P-I-P, and press return. When PIP is loaded, the 6128 displays an asterisk instead of the usual A prompt, and that tells you that PIP is ready to run. You could take the CPM disk out of the drive now, but we want to copy a file from that disk into the training disk, so leave the CPM disk in the drive. Now with PIP and with certain other CPM commands, you tell the computer what to do by writing a sort of formula which describes what you want the end result to be. In this case, we want to end up with a situation where the information on disk B colon is the same as or equal to that on disk A colon. So key in the letter B followed by a colon. Then key in an equal sign, then the letter A and a colon. and we need to specify the file we want to copy. Let's copy the file pip.com, so key that in now, pip.com. So that line now reads, make a copy so that b colon, the result, equals the file called pip.com on drive A colon. Now press return. Once again, on a single drive machine, you will need to swap disks. So put the training disk into the drive. And press any key to confirm. And pip now makes a copy of the file pip.com on the B drive. Earlier on, you used the asterisk and question mark characters with the dir command. And you can use them with all of the CPM commands. You could copy all the command files with a template b colon equals a colon asterisk dot com. We've finished with pip for the moment, so tap the return key to get back to the A prompt. Key in dir space b colon and return, and check that pip.com is indeed on the directory of files in drive B. So, you've seen how to find which files are on a disk. You've also seen how to make copies of the files you want, to create backup safety copies of your work, for example. How do you get rid of files you don't want anymore? You use the CPM erase command. You need only the first three letters. Key this in, ERA, followed by a space, and then the file name, which in full is b colon pip.com. In other words, we're telling CPM to erase that copy of pip on the disk in drive B. Press return now. And now do dir b colon once more. And press return. And you'll see that pip has been erased from the disk. One last point. You can't have two copies of a file with the same name on the same drive. So, if you want to make a copy of the file called show.com on this drive, you'll have to give the copy a different name. Let's see how to make a copy of a file with a different name from the original. We'll get pip to copy show.com and call the copy show.back. And we can do it with a single command line. Key this in, pip space, you don't need A colons all over the place because drive A is the default drive and all the work is going to take place on this drive. Remember to specify the result for the copy first. That's show.back, then an equal sign, show.com. Show.back equals show.com. And press return. If you get a beep because you've still got your training disk in the drive, put your CPM disk in and tap the spacebar. Now get another directory and you'll see you now have one more file than the last time. Show.back is exactly the same as show.com, except for the name. Now you don't have to copy a file in order to change its name. CPM has a command rename that does the job for you. It changes the name of the file, but apart from that, leaves the file completely unchanged. It works just like other CPM commands. You use the command by keying in the same type of formula, result equals original, like this. Key in REN, followed by space, then the letter S, an equal sign, then show.back, and press return. Get a directory once more, and you can see that the file that was called show.back is now called just S. And there are two important points here. Because you just made it, you know that that file is a copy of show.com. But in a few weeks' time, you'll almost certainly have forgotten. The file name S, after all, although it's perfectly acceptable to CPM, is completely meaningless to you and me. So when you come to name your own files, try to make up a name that will remind you, or anyone else who might have to use the computer for that matter, what the file contains. Remember, you're allowed 8 characters for the file name, and a further 3 to specify what type of file it is. The second point is more obvious. S is an exact copy of a file we've already got on this disk. And that would be very helpful if, say, we were going to change the original. We'd still have a copy to refer back to. But in this case, we aren't going to do anything with the copy, and it does take up valuable space on the disk. Another good rule of computing is to keep your disks tidy and clear of unwanted files as you go. So let's erase it. Key in ERA, space S, and return. Let's try something else. Key in pip and return, and wait until you get the familiar pip prompt on screen. What happens if you get stuck in the middle of a command? Or suppose you didn't mean to run pip now, but wanted show instead. Find the key labeled Control in the bottom left-hand corner of the keyboard. Hold that key down and at the same time tap the letter C. And you exit from the pip program and get back to your operating system's A prompt. You can release the Control key now. That combination of keys, Control-C, is a standard CPM control code. For example, try this. Press the letter Z and hold it down so a line of Z's appear on your screen. Not right across, stop about halfway. Let's say you'd keyed that in by mistake. It's easy enough to get rid of by tapping the Delete key once for every Z on the screen. But CPM offers you an easier way with Control-X. Hold down the Control key and tap the letter X to erase the whole line in one go. So that's Control-C to interrupt or cancel a program, and Control-X to erase a command line from the screen. I want you to key in the command word type, T-Y-P-E, followed by a space. I'll explain what we're going to do in a moment. Now key in the file name profile.eng. profile.eng, and press return. You get a printout of a series of CPM commands on screen. Don't worry about what they all mean for the moment. The key point I want to make here is that the type command allows you to display the contents of certain types of files. It won't work on COM files, for example. That display on screen tells you what's in the file profile.eng. So it's a quick way of checking things if you're not sure what's in a particular file, or if you're looking for some information and you can't remember which file it's in. Use the type command to have a look. Well, why do you suppose anyone would want a file which is composed of a series of commands to the computer? Well, the fact that it is a series of commands is the clue. You see, the contents of that file adds up to a procedure, a standard set of activities that you'll probably want to carry out over and over again. In this case, it's a procedure you might want to carry out when you switch your computer on each morning. Its main purpose is to set up the 6128 to the right language, so that in the UK, Shift 3 produces a pound sign, for example, and to set up the keyboard so that you can edit CPM commands. In fact, profile.eng is a sort of reference file for a CPM program which appears in that listing of the file contents, Submit. Submit is a program that executes a sequence of commands in a batch. It knows which commands you want batched by referring to a file just like profile.eng, except it must have the file type sub, sub. Let's do that now. Key in REN space profile dot sub and equal sign profile dot eng. Profile dot sub equals profile dot eng, and press return. Now go to directory and check you can see the file profile.sub in the listing. Nothing else has happened yet because you haven't run the command file submit.com. But submit always runs automatically if it finds a file called profile.sub when you start or reset the 6128. So let's do that now. Use the Control Shift Escape sequence, then the vertical bar followed by CPM to get back to the CPM once more. Stop the tape if you need to, and start it again when you're back at the A prompt. This time, because CPM finds a file called profile.sub on the disk, it gets submit to run that sequence of commands just as if you'd typed them in at the keyboard yourself. Now hold shift and tap number 3. And you can see that it now prints a pound sign. So the command which submit ran has worked. Using a submit file can be very useful indeed. It means you can get your 6128 to carry out any sequence of CPM commands automatically. All you need to do is create a file called something.sub. Once you've created the .sub file, you can execute all the commands with a single submit command. Simply key in submit, followed by the name of your subfile, then sit back and watch the computer perform. And remember, if you call the file profile.sub, CPM will carry out that sequence every time you reset the computer. Well, you've come a long way since you started your real-time session. We've covered a lot of CPM commands, and you've already achieved a lot. We've covered most of the essential items, the ones you need to know if you ought to manage your computer system properly. You've created a duplicate copy of a disk with Diskit. You've seen how to find out what's on a disk, how to name files, how to find out the size of a file, how to copy files with pip, how to rename files, and how to erase them once you're finished with them. You've used a wide range of hardware controls, CPM's own built-in control codes, special combination of keys on the Amstrad keyboard, through to changing various hardware settings with special programs. I've covered a lot of the background as well, to try and explain why you do certain things in certain ways. So you should be in a much better position now to make sense of the CPM manual. In session 3 and 4, we'll be putting all of these things to use, and introducing you to some new programs which use the CPM operating system. If you want to go straight on to that, you can wind the tape onto the end and skip the rest of this session. Alternatively, if you'd like to stick with me, I'll give you some hints and tips on programming in BASIC, as I promised earlier on. For that, you'll need your real-time training disk ready in Drive A. Stop the tape now while you get ready. If you're ready to continue with me into this introduction to BASIC, check your real-time training disk is in the drive and key in read, R-E-A-D, then a space, and then BASIC, B-A-S-I-C, and then return it. After a while, you should see the familiar opening display, then the first page of the electric book on BASIC. Now this introduction is very much a primer. I'm not setting out to make you an expert programmer. That takes a lot of practice, perhaps years. I'm assuming you've never used BASIC or any other computer language before. So I'm aiming to provide you with a clear understanding of what you'll be able to do with BASIC, rather than how you do it. The idea is to provide you with a good grounding, so you'll be able to interpret the many books and manuals on BASIC more easily. We'll be looking at the structure of BASIC itself. Once you understand that, you will be all set to try things out for yourself. If you have done some programming before, you'll still find this session useful. You'll probably have learned your programming the hard way. You'll find, as you work through these notes, that our structured approach should help increase your understanding, or reinforce your existing knowledge. Now, BASIC is built into your computer. Its job is to accept commands written in the BASIC language, and to interpret them so that the computer will do what you want. Tap the return key, or if you like, the letter F, to go forward to the next page. By the way, from here on, I won't be telling you how to move through the pages of the book. I'll just sign the tone to mean tap F to go forward a page. Now, there are many computer languages. BASIC just happens to be the one that's most widely used. But why do we need a language at all? We need a language because even though the computer is a very willing, very fast, very dedicated and tireless worker, it has to be told what to do every step of the way. You have to give it instructions it will recognize, so you need to talk to it in a language it knows. Now, at first glance, a language seems like a very complicated thing, virtually impenetrable. But it does have to have an underlying structure, and when you boil it down, that structure is not very complicated at all. So, let's look at some fundamental things about computer languages and about computer programs to highlight some of the key elements. The first thing to remember is that a computer program, whatever language it's written in, is nothing more than a list of instructions. Now, those instructions provide the computer with two things: commands, telling it what to do, and data, the information it needs to do the job you've asked it to do. Try to remember that breakdown. Your program, your list of instructions, must tell the computer what to do, for example, add two numbers together, and it must give the computer the two numbers it's going to add together, commands and data, the tasks and the raw materials to do that task. Let's look at them separately, starting with commands. All you need to remember for the time being is that there are three main types of command. That is because you need to have control over three things: the hardware, the software, that's the program itself, and the data. The first two control what the computer does and how it does it, the task. The third controls how the raw material is used. One way or another, you have to make sure the computer has the data it needs. Broadly speaking, as far as the typical office is concerned, the data will usually be in the form of letters, punctuation marks and symbols, and in the form of numbers and mathematical symbols. 2 plus 2, for example. Using BASIC to create programs should be a very ordered process. In a sense, writing the program is the end result, not the beginning. So let's examine the sort of things you should be doing before you start to write a program in any language. The first thing you should have crystal clear in your mind is just what it is you want your new program to achieve, what it is you want it to do. When you know that, and only when you know that, you can start thinking about how to do it. There's no use approaching the problem with only a vague notion of what you want the computer to do. I'm going to write a program to do my invoicing is just not detailed enough to be of any help. In any case, what you are going to do is not the point at issue. The important point is, what is the computer going to do? So you need to start with a list of the things the computer is going to do as it works through your instructions. Staying with our invoicing example, you need to be able to complete a statement such as this one: as a result of this program, the computer will. And you'll find it quite helpful to actually write those words down at the top of the page. Then, list the things it will do, For example, 1. Accept input from the keyboard, names, addresses, dates, quantities, prices, and so on. 2. Multiply quantity by price to arrive at the XVAT price. 3. Work out the VAT and display it. 4. Add the VAT to the XVAT price and display the result as the price including VAT. 5. Work out and display totals. 6. Print the invoice in a specified layout on special invoice paper. And so on and so on. In other words, draw up a list of the major activities or subroutines in the program. Once you have a list of the major subroutines, you can take each item in turn and work out how the program will do it. Will it start by clearing the screen? Will it print out as you enter each item? Or will it print them all out at the end? Will it assign invoice numbers, or will you? Will it work out discounts? How will it handle typing errors? Will it keep a record of each invoice you process? And remember, there's very seldom one right way of doing things. This stage is the make or break stage in developing a new program. It pays to think through the activities step by step. The more detailed your thinking, the less likely you are to forget things. When you're happy you've properly specified the logic of the design, it's time to start writing code, the actual instructions, in the appropriate dialect of BASIC. There are many different versions of BASIC. Once you've written the code, then you need to test and retest to find out the things you've overlooked and to find the mistakes, the so-called bugs, either in the logic or in the syntax, or perhaps simply the typing errors. Then you need to give the program to a range of people who've never used it before to see what bugs they bring to light while they use it under normal operating conditions. Only then should you think of releasing the program for general use. But you have to expect to be still finding unexpected bugs, perhaps 6 months after you've released it. Don't let all that put you off. Programming can be very rewarding if you approach it with the right frame of mind. You have to remember firstly that computers are amazingly stupid. But bear in mind too that other people using your programs aren't going to know them as well as you do. It's your job as the programmer to see that your program will make sense to all its potential users. If it goes wrong, that's your fault, not theirs. No matter how illogical their interpretation may seem to you. So I can't stress enough how important it is for you to think about what you're going to do in detail before you go near the computer. Once you've done that, do it again and again until you know you haven't left anything to chance. It won't stop you making mistakes, but it will minimize them. That's true not only for BASIC. I hope you can see now that general rule applies to any application program. The more thought you put into it before you start, the more successful you'll be. I don't want to put you off using BASIC, but I do want you to appreciate that constructing a good program from scratch is a very long process. And for most people, using a computer means using programs that have been written by other people, or teams of people. But it is fascinating, and an absorbing hobby. Try keying in some of the programs listed in the manual. You may just find yourself hooked. Now, it's important to realize that your 6128 is a powerful and versatile computer. And so far you've seen two quite different ways of using it, either with CPM or with BASIC. Close the book now. Select the letter Q to quit, then Y to confirm. And you don't want to save the bookmarks, so tap N for no. And finally, just hit return to get out of the electric book and back to CPM. Let's round off this session by looking at some programs which use BASIC. You need to reset the computer with Control, Shift, and Escape. Do that now. But this time, don't go back to CPM. You need the other master disk. the one labelled CPM 2.2 with DR logo on the reverse. It's side 4 of your original discs. Check that the disc is write protected and put it in the drive. On the disc is a basic program called rowintime.dem, short for Roland in Time Demonstration. Key in run, a quotation mark, R-O-I-N-T-I-M-E, a dot, D-E-M, another quotation mark, and press return. If you get the message rowintime.dem not found, it means you put the wrong side of the disk in. Check you have the disk with side 4 uppermost and try again. If you're using a green screen, answer the next question Y for yes, or N if you have a color screen. And you get a continuous demonstration of a typical computer game, complete with sound effects. This may be a good time to adjust the volume control on the back panel. Stop the tape while you take a look at the demonstration, and when you've had enough, reset the 6128. There's another demonstration on this disc, which you start by keying in run, quotes, D-I-S-C, quote, and return. While you watch this demonstration, wind the tape onto the end. Take a break before you start the next session, and go over any parts of this session if you want to. When you've finished, reset once more, and then take the disk out of the drive, and switch off the 6128. Bye for now.